welcome to The Golfing Mind, the podcast which, as always, looks at the game of golf in all its many wonderful incarnations, from the professional game right down to the club golfer. And as always, we look to explore as much as possible the mental aspect of the game, because the mental aspect of the game is something that we are all aware of. And though we may have different swings mentally, we tend to process things in a similar way. So if we can learn to process things in a similar way, we can probably find common ground to fix them. And that really lies at the heart of the creation of this podcast. I have a fascination with mental conditioning and mental strength. About 30 years ago, was it 30 years ago? Almost 30 years ago, I had become fascinated with the notion that success in life and success in sporting endeavors and the ability of some people to be happy whilst other people in a very similar situation and with similar opportunities appear always to be a bit dissatisfied with their life. And this led me to start researching in so great depth what might lie behind it. And I should point out, I had had in my late 20s, I'd been diagnosed with cancer and I was in hospital. And I always tell the story that four questions had popped into my mind. You know, the first question is, why are rich people rich? The second, why are successful people successful? And the third was, why are happy people happy? And the fourth question, quite poignantly, was, why am I none of these three people? And I wondered if it was just destiny, the stars, how they were aligned when you were born, or is there something behind it? Is there something behind our ability to improve our lives that may be under our control, or a lot more under our control than we may choose to believe? And that was that. And when I came out of hospital, I started reading voraciously a lot of self-help literature, popular psychology, biographies, autobiographies, interviews with individuals, historical books on people who'd done amazing things, pioneers in life and science. And I concluded that there were guiding principles. And I found what I thought were the guiding principles that would definitely work or make sense for me. And I applied them in my life. And 3 years later, I'd got my dream job. I was the entertainment development producer for BBC Television in Television Centre in London. And people had said to me, oh boy, you've been lucky. And I thought, well, luck didn't really have as much a part to play in it as you may imagine. And I went on to write a book called Natural Born Winners in 1999. Actually, I couldn't think of a title for the book. And I was talking to the publishers, Random House, and they said, well, what's the name of this book? And I remember at the time there was a film with Woody Harrelson called Natural Born Killers. And I had one of those like very bad comedic moments from a film where I kind of looked out the window and saw a poster for the film. And I went, oh, it's called Natural Born Winners. And they went, well, that's a good title. And that was it. So I became sort of, and the thing I should point out was I hadn't written a book. I just had an idea for a book from all the notes I'd written. And I wrote the book. The book did well and sold internationally and turned into a TV series and led to my having a complete change in the direction of my life. But I became fascinated by, you know, how our minds can work for us or against us. And more often than not, almost in 99.99, how many nines can I give you here before it gets repetitious? Well, let's just say in 99.99999% of the time, I believe people are sabotaging themselves unconsciously, or they're enabling themselves to succeed unconsciously. They're not consciously aware of what they're doing. You can see it in life, can't you? There are patterns of behavior that we unconsciously allow ourselves. It's like people who are very unpunctual. I know people that I met when I was in my very late teens, early 20s, who became dear friends, and they would always be late. And 40 years later, they're still turning up late. And when you ask them, why are you always late? They go, well, and they will tell you a good reason why they're late. And I'm not sure it's always as convincing. Or I know people who are always quite unorganized, and you don't let them organize the golf tour because there's always a reason why. Now, I'm not finding fault with these people because I have my sort of things that I'm terrible at procrastinating, and I always have been. So I have to make lists. And if I make a list, things get done. And if I don't, they don't. And when it comes to sport, and golf in particular, I truly believe with all my heart that the ability of the average golfer to improve their A, quality of play, and B, their level of enjoyment is much closer than they could possibly believe or imagine if they were to A, understand the impact of thinking, and B, their ability to change that thinking to improve their golf. Now, often when I've spoken to professionals, by the very virtue of the fact they're professionals, they play golf for a living. That's their job. That's how they pay for their mortgage, pay for their children's education. That's how they look after themselves and their family. It's their job. And yet they will spend hours and hours and hours a day on the practice range, showing a level of dedication which is common to a lot of professional athletes, which the amateur has no idea about. And yet these same golfers, when you talk about the mental game, will tell you that they think that golf is 80% mental versus mechanical. And yet their unwillingness, their dismissiveness of the idea that they can develop a stronger mind through going through mental conditioning drills just often leaves me scratching my head, because what they want almost exclusively is they want a quick fix. They just want to have a very quick fix. And you can do that. And that's what my new book is coming out next year. And the title of the book is The Six Fundamentals of the Mental Game of Golf. It's a little nod to Ben Hogan in the title, but it is about the fundamentals, and it's all about quick fixes we can do. And I've tried a lot of them with clients and friends, and they work. And more about that much later in the year, early next year. But what I found frustrating was to say, look, you can change your quality of golf by training your mind. And what I realized is when I spoke to professional golfers and amateur golfers, swinging the club's a lot of fun, but they all want to somehow find perfection. Now, Bob Rotella wrote a book, and I'm very jealous of the title of it, because the title is Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. And what I wanted to talk about today is exactly that. This notion that we need to have the perfect swing, the perfect grip, the perfect ball, the perfect clubs for us, the perfect. I've just come back last week from a golf tour I go on every year. And I have done for the last 12, 14 years. Now, the tour is called the Reloaders Tour. And I'd like to give a shout out to the members of the Reloaders. They've been doing, the original founders of it must have been doing this close to over 30 years. And at the age of 60, they're still playing two rounds a day. Admittedly, it's foursomes. And whilst they may not have the length of drive they had 20, 30 years ago, you wouldn't notice it from the effort they put in on the tee. So you have seven other members of this golf party, and they have different backgrounds. One or two of them have been as low as, I think, two or three handicaps, and some of them are just, they played once or twice a year. But what was interesting is they all want to, when you have a match, we all want to win. Now, we're dear friends, and we love each other dearly, and we enjoy each other's company immensely. But suddenly, as the first tee shots are hit, it all changes. We all want to win. And what I reflected on when I was on this tour was, if you were to watch them swinging from a silhouette, you see them in the distance on the golf course. Now, you might not know who it is. I mean, if you dressed everyone in this tour the same, you'd identify them by their swing. And the reason for that is there are 7 or 8 swings that are as far away from perfect as it is possible to be. And the notion that as amateur golfers, we're trying to be perfect, I think what we need to do is find a swing that we're happy with, that brings us, and I talk a lot about this to some of my clients. I say, look, if there was a perfect swing, you know, people talk about Adam Scott, they talk about Ben Hogan, some people have talked about Mo Norman. You know, the truth of the matter is, I think there's a theoretical best swing, but if you're tall, it might be different from someone who's short. If you're heavy, it might be different from someone who's very supple. So when I was with these fellows, what I thought was interesting was there was one fellow who is a dear friend of mine, Dave Gerrard. And Dave, I was playing with him once and against him once, and he was hitting some absolutely, and I mean absolutely cracking shots. In one match, he hit a 4-iron, 193 yards to about 6 feet, on this elevated green that was like a saucer turned upside down. It was so hard to hit this green. And as I looked at his club, I asked him, how old are your clubs? And he went, 31 years. And you're thinking, And yet we still have this pursuit of, I must get the perfect club. What I think you have to do is find a club you're happy with. Now, Dave is happy with the clubs he has. He has a new driver, I believe was a gift that he was given. The other players in the group, I won't go mentioning their names, because either they'll sue me or something. But the important thing for me was that everyone was happy with their swings. Everybody was happy with their clubs. And though we were not always happy with the outcome of a shot, most people were able to sort of remedy it. And that's what I'd like to sort of reflect on in this short podcast today. The number one thing I tell people to do, amateur golfers particularly, and professionals, is golf's a tough enough game without you beating yourself up after a bad shot. Oh, yeah, look, I get it, we're frustrated. And even I, with all my knowledge and years of working with people at the highest level, I can still bang my club hard on the ground after I've hit a poor shot. I can still roll my eyes and just send a silent curse to the universe when my drive floats right and continues to float right long after I've hit it. But too often, at that point, beating myself up is removing my enjoyment of the game. And I say this, that, you know, golf's a game. We play games to have fun. So what kind of golfer are you? Are you a golfer who's continually frustrated with the fact you're not better? Or are you someone who kind of thinks, okay, I'm getting older, my swing's getting a little slower. These clubs are 4 years old, but they're fine. And I would hope you're in the latter category, because this notion that we can perfect golf, it's very ephemeral. It comes and it goes. There are days we know when you're putting and the hole looks the size of a barrel. And if it's not going in, it's hitting the edge or it's rolling very close. And there's other days where you feel like you have a sledgehammer and the ball is like a pool ball. You have no feel. You can't read the putts. Why does this happen? And you know, I can do a whole podcast on why I think this happens. But what I do know is that when you are having a streak of great golf, it'll pass. When you're having a streak of bad golf, it'll pass. So if your goal is to hit perfect drives, perfect putts, perfect wedge shots, that's a worthy goal. I have no problem with people saying that to me. But what I do ask them to do is to be accepting of the outcome. Because if you refuse to accept anything less than perfect, you're not going to enjoy your golf. You know, I often wondered, there's some golfers who just absolutely love to practice. That's their happy place. Vijay Singh was famous. He just loved to hit balls. There was a Canadian golfer called George Knutson, who Lee Trevino said, and a lot of players said, they thought he had the best swing on the tour back in the 50s and early 60s. Just a lovely, lovely human being. And he won the Canadian Open. I think he came runner-up in the US Open. I'll have to double-check that. And he said, they said, what do you enjoy? He says, I just love to practice. And his family would say he would just go off and practice. But he didn't need to practice. He was practicing, but he just loved to practice. Ben Hogan loved to practice. Now, I think that is the place. If you're trying to find your perfection, you're probably going to find it there on the practice ground. You're going to give yourself the best chance to go nice, nice, nice. And I know I've said this a number of times. When you go to a professional golf tournament, you will, every time you go, go to the practice ground, I hope, and watch the professionals hit the ball. Now, the swings are fairly similar, or similar in as much as they're hitting the key things, shoulder turn, you know, late release, complete balance, and a perfect balanced follow through. Those four things seem to be present, but the quality of the strike is just superb, superb. But that's because there are no hazards on the practice ground. There's no bunkers to miss. There's no out of bounds. There's no ball to lose. So there's no pressure. So if you're going to find perfection, you've got to be in a place that is perfect. And that is going to be your practice ground. And that is my theory 128. I have lots of theories about lots of things. But that theory is why some of the great, great players have in common this love of practice. I was told by someone who knew Paul Azinger when he was a young, very young professional, that it would not be uncommon for him to hit 400 practice bunker shots. He had the buckets in those days at this club. He had access to 400. And they said he'd take a bucket in. And he said, and this fellow's claimed to me, he said, I once saw him finishing after hitting 400 balls. I can't imagine how you hit 400 balls onto a practice green personally, but he said he went and did it all over again. He just went back and got 400 more balls and off he went. So the love of practice. And if you're going to practice and you're over the age of 45 and you don't play golf for a living and you're an amateur, may I suggest that you practice your putting? It is the one place that the world is equal. No one, it's not about strength. It's not about technique. It's about confidence, instinct, and execution. So if you're going to practice and seek perfection, I would suggest the putting green. I'd also like to point out on the golf tour I've just been on, at no point in the four-day tour did I see any member of the Reloaders Tour ever practice their putting, their chipping, or even hitting balls in the net. The longest warm-up was four practice swings and the tee, accompanied in many cases by a bit of a hangover and or sleep deprivation or exhaustion. I must say that by the end of the fourth day, when we're playing our seventh round, it was a bit reminiscent of the, I think, the German retreat from Stalingrad. It was a eight broken men sort of walking around stoically trying to look very, very tough. Or at least not claiming to be tired. I was, being the oldest member of the group, I took an electric trolley for the day, electric buggy, someone joined me in the morning. And then in the afternoon, my pride got in the way and I thought, I better be seen to walk. So I walked the final round. And before anyone writes and asks me, why is it called the Reloaders Tour? This was because, and I think most of you can work this out, as soon as a tee shot was hit, it was obviously going into the water out of bounds. And the other people in the tee box would hold their drivers like a sort of a hunting shotgun and make the sound that goes as in reload. And if you could get your second ball in the air before the first ball had obviously landed, you are officially a reloader. Strange things what we do, isn't it? But it was a great fun tour and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But coming back again to this final reflections on perfection is, I think we to aspire to perfection is fine. We should aspire to being perfect cooks, perfect husbands, perfect partners, perfect friends. But life isn't about perfection. It's about trying your best. And I think in golf, trying your best should give you comfort that you tried your best. There's a film that I love, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I don't know if many of you have seen it. It's quite an old film now, but it's Jack Nicholson who plays a man who is sent to a mental institution because they consider him a troublesome potential prisoner. And basically he'd committed some simple offense, but he was just very anti-authoritarian. So he gets put into an asylum, fundamentally, a mental place, and he realizes he's not mad, but he also realizes most of the other people aren't as crazy as people would have thought. And he tells them he's going to just break out of there. And they said, how are you going to do it? And he pointed to this marble faucet, water fountain. He said, I'm going to lift up that water fountain and I'm going to throw it through that window. And they said, well, go on, let's see you. And he walks up to this obviously heavy-looking water fountain with marble surrounds. And he strains and he strains and his face goes red and it's not budging. And then some of the people sort of laughed at him, or they lost any respect for him. And he looked at them and said, well, at least I tried. And I think for golf, that's it. At least we should try. If you want to hit a draw, try the draw, try it. But don't get upset with yourself if you didn't execute it to a level of perfection that brings you joy. It's okay. I had a shot. I must tell you the story. I was playing in the final day with a fellow Scot, Gordon Willens. Gordo, shout out to you, my friend. And he hit a wonderful drive. And we're playing at a golf course called Brancaster, which is in Norfolk. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful course. And it was still about 210 to the green, but there's a big camel's hump in front of the green, and the green slopes on three sides. So apart from the front of the green, big drop on the right, big drop on the left, not such a big drop. So a big drop on the left, not such a big drop on the right, and long grass behind. And I took a 3-wood out, and I just relaxed, and I struck it, and I promise you, Ben Hogan couldn't have hit it better. It just came off the club, dead straight, went over the camel's hump, and we got to the green. It was 12 feet from the flag. What a shot. Now that brought me so much joy, and that was as close to perfection as you get. And by the way, if you ever get a chance to play North Berwick Golf Course, there's a hole there, and it's called Perfection. Make of that what you will. Well, that's it for this week. I am going to be travelling for a while, but there'll be a podcast coming up, and Mike Kershaw, Matt Barr, Neil Faulkner, or any one, two of the three of them will be joining me in future podcasts, and we'll be discussing the Ryder Cup again very soon. But as I always say at every podcast, if you're serious about improving your mental game, try it. Just try it. I am amazed how many people are still telling me they want to get better, and the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars they're spending on club fittings, on new clubs every 2 years, on lessons, on going away for golf weekends. They'll say, what about your noggin? And they go, yeah. I read your book, Rob, read your book. And they're not doing what they need to do. So I cannot encourage you enough. There's an online training course we have, and I think it's $300, and it's a 13-week program, and it works. It's the easiest thing for me to say. And I'll tell you what, if it doesn't work, tell me after 4 weeks, so you get your money back. I mean, I can't say fairer than that. But I often work with people one-to-one. It's a very sort of relaxed process. It's not, you don't have to do any push-ups, squats, or leg presses. You don't go out of breath, your face doesn't go red, and you don't suddenly go, oh, don't want to do that again. It's pretty straightforward. So there you have it. Well, wherever you may be in the world, and by the way, can I just give a particular, I get the statistics for this podcast, and most of my listeners, it's a kind of nice geographical distribution, but mainly it's United States and United Kingdom. Have the highest percentage of listeners. But for reasons I don't know and understand, the single biggest area of the world, proportionally, not a country, area, is Leinster in Ireland. It gets a lot of downloads there. I mean, quite an extraordinary number proportionally. And it's the most of any. It gets more downloads in Leinster than I get in New York or London. So go figure. So big shout out to Leinster. And if anyone there in Leinster is listening, please get in touch, because I'll be delighted to come over and free of charge run a small 2-hour workshop or give a talk at your club sometime next year in return for a round of golf and a couple of pints of Guinness. So can't say fairer than that. Well, I suppose I should add the airfare, but I'll cover that myself. Okay, until we meet again, wherever you are in the world, play good golf and enjoy yourself.